and welcome to the latest edition of the Historics podcast. In this one, we will be looking at the best TV cars ever. We will also be discussing the future of fuels, and we will have a look at some of the latest car designs to see if we can guess what they are. Before we get started, don't forget to like and subscribe to the Historics YouTube channel, where we have got more podcasts. We have driving of some lovely cars and also plenty of auction previews. I am joined, as ever, by auction expert Matthew Priddy.
Good morning.
And YouTuber and car fan Tom Exton.
Hello.
Now, we are at Ascot Racecourse, which is home to some of the Historics auctions over the year. And it's where we kind of bring a different horsepower to proceedings here. But the only pony chat from us in this podcast will be to do with a Mustang. See what I've done, I know. So please strap yourselves in for some entertainment. If you can hear any banging and crashing in the background, that's not our production team. That is actually setting up for the forthcoming auction that we have got here. So let us kick the podcast off with the best TV cars ever. Matthew. Ooh.
So first one that comes to mind, and one of my favourite TV shows, was The A-Team.
Oh.
So that was a GMC Vandura.
Yeah.
They actually did use different vans throughout that. They just livered them up all the same. And interestingly, even the little Matchbox die-cast car has some of the wrong colours on it because they kept changing it around.
No way.
Always driven by, was it Beer Baracus?
Beer Baracus.
Always drove, he liked to fly.
Yeah.
So he always drove it.
Yeah.
And then another cool fact was in 98 episodes of that 18 program, which was all about violence, surely.
Oh, yes, it was.
Not one person died or got shot.
No way.
So it could be on daytime TV.
Really?
There you go.
That is an excellent fact.
But yeah, that van, I still think it's really cool.
Oh, me too.
So nowadays, you see them in city centres for stag do, don't you? Just turn it up and bobbing out. But I thought that was really cool.
All black with some red stripes.
Like,
and
chunky, knobbly tyres and going off-road.
Love it.
Yeah.
When I worked on a radio station a while ago, we had B.A. Baracus, who came in to see us.
And
B.A. Baracus came in, and I have never quite experienced a man who has an aura as he has.
With all of that jewellery.
Well, he didn't really have all the jewellery on. He was there to promote a nut chocolate bar at the time. Get some nuts! And he came in and he was just so mesmerising, magnetic and calming. And when he left the studio, I almost cried because he'd had that much of an effect. And not just on me, but the other people as well in the studio.
Really?
He just
what?
Was... Yeah, honestly. It was like he just had magical powers.
That's because you grow up with these things. It's such an icon, even though it's not that big of a celebrity.
Yeah.
It's just what you remember.
But also just just a wonderful human being who just exudes loveliness.
Wow.
Let's all have a slice of B.A. Baracus on us today, eh?
I mean, I need to Google who he is first, and then I'll get on to it.
Oh, the youth of today.
Oh, youth, I love that.
Who else are you going to offer up, then, as a
four-wheeled
wonder?
See, the other one I thought, let's think UK-based.
Yes.
Del Boy and Rodney.
Oh.
Now, see, even
three
Tom
wheels.
Has got this. Three wheels, by any chance. The little reliant Rodney, the Trotters Independent Traders. And that was so iconic. Ridiculous, of course, but that was on our screens for so long. And even if you went on holiday, it was in some screen in a bar constantly, which has now been taken over by those silly montages of people falling over. But that used to be everywhere you go. It followed you everywhere. It was Christmas specials, and I thought that was a fantastic one. And interestingly, of course, those Reliant Robins, which was more than one, they've been sold at auctions before. So I remember, you know, only 5-6 years ago now, I think one sold for £44,000.
What?
And there's lots of replicas. There's loads of them, because obviously it's so easy to do. But one of the original cars, £44,000.
Wow.
What do you do with it?
Oh, my gosh. Because they're not the most beautiful looking cars.
No.
They're certainly not the most dynamic to drive. But yet, they captured our imagination.
Yeah. It was. And it was rammed down your throat for so many years, because it just kept being... It was on screens for so, so long.
Yeah.
I think now the youth of today probably don't quite get that, but anyone over the age of 30 will just, and right up, will just know everything, every episode.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Can I offer up something from across the pond?
Yes.
I'm going to go for Kit from Knight Rider.
See, I love that.
Now, Kit, can you remember what it stands for? KITT. Knight Industries 2000. Kit from Knight Rider.
I do remember now.
And this is Michael Hasselhoff before his Baywatch days.
Yes.
He was sort of like a crime fighter and used this high-tech car called Kit. And
didn't they, he actually drove into the back of an Arctic lorry, which was like a technology centre, and then he would come back out of it and off he goes. Brilliant. Just ridiculous, but brilliant.
But the brilliant thing about Kit is that he was computer controlled but had artificial intelligence, so he could learn and he could interact with humans. And he also had a molecular shell, a molecular bonded shell to protect the car from explosions.
It's probably not that far off where we are, even with my Tesla outside.
Well, should we try it later?
I mean, you can take it if you want. Have the car.
If we get from height and drop things on it, exactly. From here, we could try.
It had a pyroclastic lamination, which meant that it could withstand temperatures over 400 degrees C.
Pyroclastic.
I don't even know if that's a real word.
No,
or not.
But why would you need that?
Fantastic, doesn't it?
Maybe because, a dictator or something.
Yeah, but he was fighting high-tech crime. Don't forget. So he was, you know, it could also Kit could chemically analyse all sorts of things, from scanning fingerprints to bullet residue.
You could see through walls.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? I just remember the steering wheel, though. It was just so futuristic now. And then what sort of, in the last 10 years, people have tried it, especially with electric cars, and it was just a little U-shaped steering wheel. It was more like a joystick.
Yeah.
It was just the coolest thing.
But don't forget, he could pretty much drive himself, so you didn't really need
a full-size
wheel.
I think he drove himself more than David Hasselhoff, to be honest. He seemed to always be, Hasselhoff was in a burning building, Kit was driving himself.
Exactly, and trying to rescue Hasselhoff.
Yeah. The real star of that show was definitely not David Hasselhoff.
No, it was definitely Kit. So for me, that's my little
honey. That's a favourite of mine.
And then I'm going to have to go for Magnum PI. Magnum, his Ferrari 308 GTS. I'm going to have to offer, although that is nothing compared to what Kit could do. It basically had Tom Selleck in it, and as far as I'm concerned, that's fine.
That's possibly one of, and still to this day, on the tip of everyone's tongue, one of the most iconic car teams, really, isn't it? That Magnum PI car.
And but the thing is, he's over 6 foot, so he had trouble getting in to the car. So they had to apparently make a few sort of adjustments to fit his big boy size in. Would you like to offer anything up? I know TV is not quite your
TV and
thing.
Film, not my forte. However, Miami Vice.
Yes, again, that's like,
you know what I'm going to say.
Yes, yeah. And in that car in white.
Yeah, white. Testarossa, like same sort of ideas. 80s Ferrari, you can't go wrong with any of them. But I think of the crop, Testarossa is top of the tree in terms of being iconic.
I don't see white ones though ever.
You don't ever, do you?
No.
Because why would they? Here, everyone goes red, goes safe. Yeah. And in the UK, white wouldn't have been. It is definitely a Miami kind of car, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was one or two spec new out of Maranello concessionaires or whatever it was. I think one or two people did go for it. I think Chris Evans might have resprayed one white as well.
Well, liked a white car, a white Ferrari.
Yeah, he had all those white ones, didn't he? But did you know, in the show, the original car that they had was actually a replica, because the TV show couldn't afford it or didn't want to afford it. So they just had a body kit on, I don't know, the equivalent of an NR2, whatever it was. And then Ferrari actually gave them two real cars. And
because of the success.
Yeah, because of the success. And it became one of the most popular cars on TV all times. And so much so iconic, I'm kind of around that age, I actually bought one. I then drove it and realised that
you weren't in Miami Vice.
No, I wasn't in Miami Vice.
Sleeves just wasn't the look.
Driving around Wandsworth in a Testarossa didn't quite have the same allure to it with it overheating. However, that's my pitch.
What was it like to drive around town? Heavy clutch, clunky gear,
actually
shift?
Actually pretty chilled.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a cruiser. People think you're cool as well. They don't hate you.
No.
You drive, people let you out. Like, kids love it, grown-ups love it, and no one thinks you're an awful chav that's just come into some money.
Has anybody been buying TV cars of late? A little catch-up on what we've been up to in our private lives. Or not so private, because you splash all over YouTube.
Everything's broadcast. No TV cars. Some cars, but no TV cars.
Oh, what cars?
V12 Lusso.
Oh.
Very posh.
Nice.
Yes.
For the dogs in the back.
For the dogs, yeah. One of them's going to drive it, and the other one's going to be in the passenger seat. And the girlfriend with him in the back. And an RSQ3 as well. I haven't taken delivery of either of these yet, but I have to go and get them and pay for them this week.
Indeed, that's always the downside of getting
cars. Yes, I know, annoying.
I'm still driving around this new Macan.
Macan.
I don't buy that it's Macan.
Macan.
Porsche
it sounds so wanky,
says,
doesn't it?
Says that it is Macan, even though it is Macan.
Do you know what? Actually, you're right, because you know, if
you
ever called
Tom
a dealer, I don't need to qualify what you're saying. The fact that I've said it's right probably means it's wrong. But you know when they do the automated things and you ring the dealer and it gives you the spiel, I heard them say Macan on the voiceover.
But I've got, I parked up the other day next to the Alfa Romeo Quattroporte, I bought the wrong bloody car.
Did you?
I mean, to be fair, I would be
the Stelvio
crucified.
Thingy.
No, the Giulia, the saloon one.
Oh, they're nice.
But I probably would have been crucified on everything running cost-wise, which is amazing to think. But that's 550 brake horsepower. Would have just drunk fuel. I'd have had to insure a thing. But, I should have got
nice
it. And
car.
It would have also depreciated like a bomb, but it's a bomb. I'm sure the Porsche won't. I went sensible. I went boring. I should have bought the Alfa Romeo.
The Stelvio's nice as well. It's good news. Really good news.
Yeah, but
they're a bit crashy though.
An Alfa Romeo SUV, oof, it's brave.
It is. I think they're better than they were. I don't think they fall apart quite as much.
Sounds like one's coming towards Tom on the YouTube channel to me.
I know. I'm not. That's no.
Not for now.
Not for now.
Cue next podcast.
Get rid of the RSQ3. See you later.
I'm having a wonderful experience in a new addition to the fleet. Mm. I've gone fully electric.
Fully electric.
Yeah. I have Mustang Mach-E.
So last time I was with you, you struggled to get home on a car that was hybrid. So you decided to go full Jeopardy on a full electric.
I managed to run the hybrid out of any battery and fuel.
Have you bought an extension cable with you?
No. No, I haven't.
What's it like?
It's fantastic. To start with, it's bright orange. So, you know, I can be seen, which is always a good thing for safety reasons.
When it runs out of juice on the hard shoulder.
I'm thoroughly enjoying it. It's super smooth, really spacious, lovely bits of cloth and just fun tactile interior, which is great. Just beginning to get my head around the whole.
It's a different way of living and moving around.
I can't suddenly have a quick top up.
Do you have home charging?
We are just in the process of getting a home charger done. So at the minute,
I'm
relying on
public
transport, public systems.
Yeah.
And then trickle charging through a 3-pin plug, which takes about 24 hours.
You can use it on Monday. Why? It's Thursday.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're doing the 3-point plug thing and you're using extension cable or anything like that, always unwind the extension cable, apparently.
Oh, yes.
Because if you have it coiled,
warms up.
Apparently, that's just not a thing.
Okay. I don't have it on an extension lead, but that's great.
Keep it unraveled because it can get super, super hot.
It'll melt and then it can set fire to things.
This.
Wow.
We do the same with charging cars in the showrooms and things. Always be careful. Make sure you
just never have it coiled.
Top tip there.
So, boys, what is the future going to look like? Are we all going to be plugging in absolutely everything?
Well, I think there's going to... we were saying earlier about... I'm sure that there's... You can't kill off this petrol, this fuel, because it's going to become cheaper if it starts to get competition with electricity. Then, obviously, those that are producing it are going to make sure that it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
But also for classics, there's... It's going to be always a market. And, of course, these synthetics and things that are
being
developed, which look incredibly clever. They're expensive at the moment, but I'm sure that that will change.
Yeah. So just thinking about future fuels, we've got 1.3 billion vehicles with combustion engines in the world.
Mm.
When the legislation comes in 2030 that we can't buy new cars that have got 100% petrol or 100% diesel engines... we're still going to need fuel for those 1.3 billion vehicles
Absolutely.
With combustion engines.
And the most efficient car is the one you keep throughout its life, not the one you trade in all the time, as we well know. So, there's got to be a backup for that, and I'm sure there will be. But
I would absolutely love to see e-fuels in all of the current petrol stations that we've got. And e-fuels, or synthetic fuels, is another word for them. It's basically fuel that doesn't come from fossil energy sources.
But presumably they can
run
through the current infrastructure as well. So
exactly.
It makes more sense.
No modifications needed to engines, nothing. Yeah. It's just exactly the same. But
out of petrol stations, out of pumps.
It's just £100 a litre.
They can still get you for expensive chocolate bars when you're going to pay.
Yes, exactly. And Porsche and partners, they've opened up an e-fuel pilot plant in Chile, which is great news. And if more of these became available, then it would be a good thing for all of us. Mm. But just to give you some idea on how much literage that we need. So this pilot plant in Chile can make up to 130,000 litres in its first year. And Porsche is going to put them into some motorsport programmes and sort of various Porsche centres. But then they're going to ramp it up in a year to 550 million litres. towards the second half of the decade, actually, sorry. Now, to put that into perspective, so 550 million litres will come out of this chilli plant. The UK uses more than 800 million litres of unleaded a year.
Perfect.
Without even thinking about diesel. So we need a massive amount of this stuff.
I think that there will be... The amount that they can produce is going up and the amount that we're consuming is coming down. So there's going to be a point where it's met at some point. But I think the cost of this stuff as well is going to be astronomical at least a decade.
Okay, it's still thrown into this mix. What do you think the Middle East are going to do with all these barrels of oil they're producing? I mean, yeah, it could go into other energy sources, but there's going to be a fight on your hands. They're not just going to lay down and say, well, all that wealth that we were bringing in, we've replaced it with a minuscule amount of tourism. And we'll just give up. That's just not going to happen. There will be some sort of trade-off here. That, along with the infrastructure, which, even though it's 2030, I cannot see how that's going to work. The infrastructure is nowhere near. You said it yourself. You know, you've got to get one at home. Then, as you drive here, it's never quite as simple as you think it'd be. You can't just go around the M25, pull off for 20 minutes, plug in. They say you can, but you can't. The charger's
not
available.
You don't have full freedom.
It's not the same.
It's not just
It's a lot of infrastructure. A hell of a lot of infrastructure, which I don't think is... It's appreciated, but it's not catching up.
I know. It is frustrating for me because I've always banged the drum about e-fuels because I can see that they are a great way forward. But the backing is just not quite there. You know, it's up to a car manufacturer like Porsche to say, you know, let's go make.
And it will be government backed at some point as well, won't
it? It's going to be we need it now. We need it to be happening now.
The whole 2030 legislation is all about, you know, countries having to adhere to these climate change parameters, so it'll have to be backed by the countries, really, who have to put money into these manufacturers to design the infrastructure and the e-fuels and the electrics so that they can actually hit these targets.
We ought to just give a quick mention to hydrogen as well, because there are two cars on the market, just two, that you and I can buy for about £50,000 that will run on hydrogen. That's the Hyundai Nexo.
I didn't even realise there was
something. SUV and the Toyota Mirai saloon car, which I have driven. They are as equally smooth and as quiet as, you know, running a full electric car, but you just need to top up their fuel cell with hydrogen. And there are only about a dozen hydrogen stations
in the whole of the
UK.
And I'm assuming you can't put a hydrogen thing at your home.
Now, you probably could, but I would recommend that you are some sort of chemist.
Yeah,
and you've got a special lab.
You're being garden, basically, isn't it?
If you've done a hole in the side of your house, I wouldn't bother.
I've been quite adept with the LPG in the back garden. That's a bit like explosives, so hydrogen as well.
James May, doesn't he love all the hydrogen thing?
He loves tech.
He wasn't banging the drum about hydrogen. I think he think that's great?
He thinks it's the best way forward, but again, it's the change of infrastructure, and electric took over quicker.
I think that hydrogen is perfect for buses and lorries, where they can store a lot of hydrogen as they move, and then they go back to the depot overnight and fill it. That would be my ideal.
And it's probably better than trying to charge electric, so it makes much more sense for big industrial equipment.
Absolutely.
Is hydrogen more of a kind of a squirting procedure?
And it's pretty much the same speed that it would take you to fill a petrol or diesel one. Yeah. But it is more expensive per mile to run than a battery electric vehicle.
Fast charging is expensive, you know. Charging on the road.
On the road.
I put a couple hundred miles in the Tesla. £50.
Well, do you remember, was it a good year ago? When the fuel crisis, there was a lot of smug Tesla drivers going past us. And then, of course, everyone just turned table on when the electricity prices went through.
I did work it out. I drove the new Civic Hybrid petrol thingy, and I was doing 75, 80 miles to the gallon quite happily. It's one of the best cars I've driven ever, that new Civic. It's just the best at being a car.
But it's as opposed to being a
just as an A to B. I just need a vehicle.
To me,
it's amazing.
Yeah. Right then. Back in the olden days, in the 80s and 90s,
I see what you're doing here.
When the lovely TV cars that we spoke about earlier on were littering our TV screens in the roads, they were instantly identifiable machines.
Right.
Today, not quite so. We're going to have a little test of see if you can tell me what the cars are. So, this is number one. I've blanked off various details.
Is that a Kia?
Got to be a Kia.
It's a Kia, isn't it?
Surely.
From there.
You didn't do it on the wheels, but my eyesight's not good enough to have
a look. Oh, yeah, giveaway. So I'm right.
Is it a Kia?
It is a Kia.
Need to get a lot closer.
He gave that one away. I thought Kia because of this light line here.
Yeah.
I don't know what model it is.
No, I mean, the model, you're pushing
that looks like bigger than the Tucson, so presumably that's whatever the Sportage is, but...
Well done.
The man knows his Kias, look at you, you're a subject matter expert.
I used to love this Sportage. Kid understanding a car from a mile off, yeah.
But you're right about the lights, it's like, that's it's one defining feature, which is great, and then they try it's got something.
Yeah, they try and then... They don't do it as much as they used to, because you used to have one defining feature through a range, didn't you? And then kind of a bit crazy now.
I like the look of it, but it could be a Mazda, it could be anything.
Okay, well done. But it took a while to get there.
Took some sloppy Photoshop for me to get it.
Let's go with this one.
Nissan Artia. Artia.
It's either a Nissan or a Honda.
Yeah, it's a Nissan.
It's quite a handsome.
I did the launch for that. I did some work with Nissan. Yeah, I know that one.
And it's
very good car.
It's Nissan. An Aria.
Yeah, that's basically what I said. I remember I was getting told off all day because I kept saying it wrong. Yeah.
Very good.
Yes.
But, okay.
The British Motor Show or something.
But you've got insider knowledge on that one, because if you went to the launch, then
Nissan, holler at your boy.
Volkswagen, definitely a Volkswagen. That's got to be bigger, so it looks like the what's it called?
Touareg.
Touareg.
Tiguan.
Style. I don't know what they still call it that.
T-Roc.
The T-Roc's the tiny
Eon.
One, isn't it? Look at you go.
Beetle.
Up GTI.
It's the Touareg.
It's the Touareg.
Yeah.
That's the car.
But it's the grill, you see. The grill is definitely a VW grill.
You can always have a Touareg, and people don't throw things at you like if you owned a Range Rover or something.
It's
else.
Like the Volvo 4x4.
Yes. It's like you allowed it.
Everything's fine, but we're not bad news. I was going to say a bad word then, but yeah. Didn't they make like a V10 diesel of that?
They did. They can pull up epic engines, yeah.
You can like pull people's houses down with it and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they make some top-tip really engines. And there's the V50 version or so, R50 version, which was also rare and fast. With that was the V10 petrol, I think.
What's the W12. Yeah, there we go.
Car geeking.
Oh, I had one of those recently. It's a Formentor Cupra.
Well done.
Really good car.
John in the office has got one as
well. It was a press car. I think that might actually have been...
It is a press picture that I've got there. Well, I think we've done really well.
But we've never done this before. We've actually succeeded at a quiz.
That's really... last one. Uh-oh. I wanted just to do a flashback to show you how instantly brilliant cars used to be.
Mm. Sierra Cosworth. Two of them here. Two of them here.
I know.
Mazda RX-8, what is it? Bants.
Well, I think that's not as bad as I was expecting then.
Any of the previous quizzes where I was on a solid zero.
So you picture quit.
We basically moved
quizzes.
It away from any kind of TV and movies. We're all right.
Yeah. Anything with colours and pictures, I'm in.
I'll do a drawing quiz next time.
Bring it on.
A really good idea.
Two extra sketches and have to draw something. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Right, well, that is it for this edition of the Historics Podcast. We would love to see you at the next auction, which is happening on Saturday, May the 27th. But in the meantime, if you'd like to catch up on more historic stuff, Tom is going to tell you how to do it.
You've got, obviously, the streaming platform which you're listening to this podcast, or if you're watching it on YouTube, you've also make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel, because there will be a preview of all auctions and all the cars on the channel as well. And of course, don't forget the Instagram platform as well. You'll get a little sneak peek of all the cars coming up at the next auction on there, ahead of when they go into the catalogue. And you'll also, if you're really unlucky, see our faces popping up on there as well, including mine. Sorry about that. That's it, really.
And
one more week still to go to consign cars for the May auction. So if you do want to consign your car, have us come out. No obligation, value your car, have a look at it. Please email in or contact us through the telephone numbers or the websites or the Instagrams, anything you like, and we'll come have a look at your car, value it, and there is time to get into that May sale.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Yes, until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.